All right, let us continue now. This is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 122C, page 484. And we've been discussing some interesting triangles. We're in that section called the Science of Triangles. And we have triangles which lie behind the planetary center called Shambhala, one that lies behind the hierarchy, and one that lies behind humanity. And they involve the pointers of the Great Bear and Polaris as well. The pointer number two is involved in a triangle which it seems to originate. It goes to the constellation Aries and thence to the Earth and is supported by two first-rate planets also anchored in the Earth, and this is a fourfold, fivefold system behind the founding of Shambhala on the Earth. Triangle number two involves Scorpio, Sirius, and Mars, and is responsible for the founding of the hierarchy upon the Earth. It's not a mild triangle, even though it has a strong second ray component. Triangle number three involves Leo, Polaris, which implicates the Little Bear, and pointer number two, or let's say the pointer closest to Polaris, and that is the triangle behind humanity. So when you really look at it, the three pointers, with the two pointers and Polaris, are each involved respectively in one of these triangles. Merak, a six-ray star, but with a strong second-ray line implication, is involved, interestingly, in the founding of Shambhala. Polaris is involved in the founding of hierarchy, and it is part of the Little Bear, which plays the role of the son to the father aspect transmitted by the Great Bear. And then the pointer closest to the Polaris, which is Dubai, is involved in the triangle behind humanity. And DK tells us that when the work of all these triangles has been concluded, humanity, and in a mysterious sense, our Earth will be functioning in perfect rhythm and will respond to the energies pouring in from Alcyone. It seems to suggest that Alcyone is an elevated star and that conditions on Earth will have to become very advanced before a full response to Alcyone will be possible. These three triangles will be behind the Earth becoming a sacred planet, or at least they are some of the energies which contribute to the growing sacredness of the Earth. Interesting that one planet is involved here as well, and that is Mars. And Mars is a non-sacred planet, but has much to do with the founding and support of hierarchy, spiritual hierarchy on the Earth. There are two particular signs that open the door to hierarchy, and these are Capricorn and Scorpio, and thus Saturn and Mars are two planets which, though considered to be malefic, at least I suppose sometimes from the point of view of the human personality, which doesn't want to give up too much, are really benefic planets which help open the door from the fourth kingdom into the fifth kingdom. Yes, and we remember a particular line of triangles that did open the door from the fourth to the fifth, and we studied that a little bit earlier. And we may remember that there are seven signs of crisis and five signs which are important in the life of the advancing disciple and are making possible the transition from the fourth kingdom of nature into the fifth. And these are those five signs plus Leo, which links the spirit aspect, as it demonstrates in the seven signs of crisis, with the self-conscious aspect. These we have discussed, and the manner in which the individual man comes in contact with the pairs of opposites and decides in the favor of the higher pairs of opposites, and then becomes the one-pointed disciple on his way to illumination found in Taurus, and the whole matter is resolved in the higher initiations through pervasive wisdom and universal love in Pisces and Aquarius, respectively, as they represent the initiations 4 and 5. Either one of them can be found in both of those initiations. We've been taught that some people end their experience in the human kingdom by becoming the universal, becoming the world server in Aquarius, and some by the world savior in Pisces, a still more demanding finale to the human stage, and relating them to Shambhala. All right, just a little background for a moment. I cannot too strongly repeat, says the Tibetan. Let's do it this way. That esoteric astrology is entirely concerned with forces and energies which affect the consciousness aspect of the human being and condition the personality life thereby, I would say. But first of all, it is the consciousness aspect which is undergoing change, transformation, when we consider esoteric astrology, and these things inevitably work themselves out in the outer life. We are not specifically focused upon the fate of the personality by itself in the lower three worlds. We are concerned with the ongoing development of the human being, especially in the consciousness aspect, which is his soul aspect. This is the factor which really has to change. We need to locate where we are in terms of consciousness, and then find our way to the expansion and deepening of that consciousness, which will have its inevitable results on the form. This is the point which must be considered above all else, he emphasizes to us. In other words, esoteric astrology is concerned with the soul and not with the form, and therefore all that I have to say refers to consciousness, to its expansion, to its effect upon the vehicles, which will be inevitable in time, the form, and in the last analysis, as will be later established, with the science of initiation. So we can say the advancement of consciousness occurs through progressive initiations. So this is this statement that he wants us to bring firmly into our minds, what esoteric astrology is. And of course, unless there is some experience with the soul and its meaning, esoteric astrology cannot be meaningfully applied. It's concerned with the soul and not with the form, and therefore all that I have to say here refers to consciousness, to that something which allows us to touch ever new contacts or registrations and understand their relationship to other such, to its expansion, to its effect upon its vehicles, the form, and in the last analysis, as will later be established with the science of initiation. This is so easy to regress and to consider all astrology in terms of our usual personality identity that we lose touch with the very thing which is the object of development in esoteric astrology. This I've earlier pointed out, but the idea is so new and the approach so universal or cosmic that it is not easy for those trained in modern exoteric astrology truly to comprehend the significance of this teaching. And I've seen this many times, that one may have a theoretical grasp of the new rulerships and some of the basic concepts of esoteric astrology, yet drop them entirely when attempting to interpret the horoscope, simply to revert to the old methods. So this helps us avoid reversion. In considering the triangles, which I have chosen to use as the theme in elucidating this immense subject, I suppose the science of triangles is immense, but esoteric astrology is even more immense, though the basis of it is really the science of triangles. This emphasis upon the consciousness aspect must not be forgotten. And so when we look at our own lives, let us ask ourselves, what is the state of my consciousness? Has it changed over the years? Has it deepened? Has it expanded? Changes in consciousness generally are prepared slowly. Occasionally there may be sort of an overnight awakening, but that's after a long preparation. And during the preparation period, there are transformations going on, but it's more difficult to see than, for instance, when some accident happens to the personality or personality fortunes rise or fall. What is the consciousness with which we meet any change in the personality? This is key, because it is the consciousness which survives death and not the form. It is the consciousness which persists. And ultimately, by which we are known. Our consciousness makes the form through which it expresses. So if we can focus our attention on the subject of consciousness and the subtle changes necessary to improve that consciousness, we'll know the major way in which esoteric astrology is to be applied. For the remainder of this section, says the Tibetan, I shall take up those triangles which at this time and in this world cycle, which are at this time in this world cycle, producing effects in the human consciousness. These effects are of two kinds, those which are general and not so easily discernible, and those which affect the masses, and which affect the masses of men, and those which are more specific in their results, more tangibly effective, and which serve to condition the consciousness of the world aspirants, disciples, and initiates. So we have the effects of triangles of two kinds of effects, mass effects, not so easily detectable, discernible, and those which presumably are a little more specific in their results, more tangibly effective in the consciousness. Notice that it serves to condition the consciousness again of world aspirants and disciples, always conditioning the consciousness. And if we are of the type of human being who pays attention to the state of our consciousness, then esoteric astrology will be very useful to us. All right. Today, this dual movement of energies is going on, producing a slow, steady awakening of the mass consciousness, a slow, steady awakening of the mass consciousness, so that individual self-consciousness on a large scale will be the result, and more rapid stimulation of the already awakened consciousness of advanced humanity. Now, so the slow, steady awakening of the mass consciousness, so that individual consciousness on a large scale will be the result. This is obviously, isn't it, the movement from Cancer to Leo. And so that the already awakened consciousness of advanced humanity will be stimulated in such a way that initiation will be achieved, and in many ways, this is the this type of movement centers around response to the energy of Leo. Both Leo and Capricorn are potent in producing the first initiation. Many are the contributors to producing the various stages of consciousness, and I've already reviewed that recently, talking about the different signs of the zodiac which contribute to the different initiatory possibilities. I've also looked at the planets which can contribute to the expression of the seven chakras. And similarly, if planets are involved in contributing to the seven chakras, then the signs they rule will also be involved. And that in terms not only of exoteric rulership, but of esoteric rulership, and even hierarchical. It makes me think for a moment, you know, when I think that Neptune, Jupiter, and the Sun are all involved in the heart center, maybe to a certain extent Venus, we could say that Leo is involved with the heart center indeed, but what about Aquarius with its esoteric ruler of Jupiter? Because Jupiter relates to more advanced people, to their heart center. What about Neptune? It may still be more advanced and may implicate Cancer because it's the hierarchical ruler. Of course, it also has connections with Virgo and with Aquarius and so forth. But there's a what a weaving and a mixing of energies we are presented with. And they all are cooperative and are administered by our planetary logos and its Sanat Kumara, and are expressing through the hierarchy into humanity, producing combined effects. So really what we're looking at here in an interesting sense is we are looking at what might be called astrochemistry, the combinations of various astrological factors to produce certain results, especially in the field of consciousness, when it comes to esoteric astrology. So there are two types of triangles here, and they so we will be on the lookout now for the mass effect and for the effect upon those who are on the path. Look then for the triangles relating to the mass effect and to an effect upon those who are on the path, whatever phase of the path that might be, path of aspiration, path of discipleship in its several grades, probationary discipleship, accepted discipleship, advanced discipleship, and the path of initiation. The effectiveness of this dual process can be seen if it is realized that the three great signs, Leo, Sagittarius and Aquarius, all of these found in relation to the Masonic degrees as well, which in allegory portrays the ascent of man's consciousness. The effectiveness of this dual process can be seen if it is realized that three great signs, Leo, Sagittarius, Aquarius, are today exceedingly active and working in close relation with each other. In other words, the lords of the constellations are working closely with each other, the lords of these particular constellations. In Masonry, we recall the Entered Apprentice degree EA relating to Leo, and the FC degree Fellowcraft relating to Aquarius, and an aspect of the Master Mason degree relating to Sagittarius. And there are other degrees that are involved here as well. It's a wonderful allegory for the ascent of man, and people are taught to accustom themselves to the theme of initiation and the process of initiation by passing through the Masonic Lodge. So I strongly recommend it, especially in its present form of transformation under the ancient universal mysteries, and with Keith Bailey as the chief principal officer. I strongly recommend affiliation with the Masonic Lodge, which is now being reformed and revitalized in the ancient universal mysteries. They are the three signs whose energies are affecting humanity as a whole. Well, how might we think so? You know, Leo bringing in self-consciousness, Sagittarius strengthening aspiration and the focusing the desire and aspiration towards a vision, Aquarius bringing in group consciousness. There are many movements towards group consciousness. They don't only occur in relation to disciples and initiates. So they are affecting humanity as a whole, as a kingdom of nature. So how so? Says the Tibetan Leo. The sign of the self-conscious individual is potent in its mass effect today through the stress of circumstance and the dire result of certain events, namely the war, either impending or going on while this was being written. Thousands of men and women are stepping out of the ranks of the mass conscious herd and out of the deep sleep of irresponsibility, because soul consciousness is recognized through the sense of responsibility which it impels, and becoming aware of themselves as detached functioning entities. The stage of Leo, I am, is emerging. Interesting about responsibility, Saturn, the planet of responsibility, is related to Leo in the 18-fold tabulation that we have been giving a lot of attention to. We remember Great Bear, Leo, Saturn, Shambhala, head, center, base of spine. That six-fold progression. So stepping out, emerging as a responsible, self-aware human being. Okay, many of those in the mass emerging as responsible, self-aware human beings. Now, what of Sagittarius? It does rule initiates of the first and second degree, but how will it affect the mass? It's, well, he's talking about a mass effect, but it's powerfully affecting world aspirants and leading them towards those attitudes of mind which will produce an unswerving allegiance to the spiritual values and an unalterable adherence to the good of humanity. Well, this sounds all right. Maybe aspirants are considered part of the mass, part of the mass. Anyway, it's a mass effect. All these are mass effects because they are affecting many. Now, in the fifth petal of the egoic lotus, ruled by Leo, the opportunity to become the aspirant is offered. And then, interesting that much fifth ray passes through the fifth petal. The sixth petal that we can consider, in a sense, ruled by Virgo, also has an association with Sagittarius because a greater amount of sixth ray comes through Sagittarius at this time than any other constellation. And so it is reorienting and involved in preparing for the second initiation. But the stage we're talking about here is pre-initiatory. So there are, yes, we can say that we're still dealing with the mass, at least, because the stage of aspiration, per se, is pre-initiatory. Now, DK is going on and talking. See, originally he says, Leo, Sagittarius, and Aquarius are signs affecting humanity as a whole, as a kingdom of nature. Well, there are a number of brackets in humanity, a number of developmental brackets. So even though he's talking about the mass becoming the individual and the aspirants becoming one-pointed in their adherence to spiritual values, and even though he now is going to speak of disciples and initiates, he is speaking largely of an effect that involves many. Aquarius is with equal potency affecting the world disciples and initiates, leading them, I suppose, towards the higher initiations, towards world service on a large scale. So, again, the field discussed is the whole of humanity, even though we are discussing lesser and higher ranks within humanity, producing group activity and that living usefulness, which is the hallmark of the pledged disciple. So Aquarius leading towards pledged discipleship. DK frequently refers to his students, those who were in his groups that he was forming, as pledged disciples, or he refers to them as accepted and pledged disciples. So we can see that Aquarius has its usefulness past the first degree, but also gathering people before the first degree, at the stage of aspiration, into group formation where they can benefit from the group energy. We see this going on all the time in the tendency towards self-help groups of people who share a similar issue or a similar problem and gather together for mutual support and reinforcement. This is Aquarian as well, and it occurs before one has reached the stage of discipleship, but certainly it does have an elevating effect, Aquarius does have, on disciples and initiates, bringing them into the still higher levels eventually, where Aquarius can be used in relation to the third degree or the fourth degree, maybe even the fifth. It does have a lot of fifth ray in it, and that ray is related to the fifth initiation, even though the first ray is the major ray they're influencing. The influence of these three constellations is felt through their esoteric planets. And the mass movement in consciousness for which Leo is responsible can be noted as possible even by the novice when he realizes that the ruling planets in Leo are, from three angles, exoteric, esoteric, and hierarchical, the sun. So the mass is awakening or having points of individualized light awakening within it. or individuated light. The mass movement towards individual self-consciousness is today enormously intensified, as is the paralleling individual movement towards initiation. So these are two phases of Leonian expression from the mass to the individual, from the individual, from the recognized individual to the initiate of the first degree. First, of course, Leo can be involved, as I've tried to say, through the heart of the sun in the second degree, and through illumination through the third, and through the destruction of the causal body in the fourth, and through the great revelation, which is the name of the fifth degree, to that fifth degree, it being the fifth sign. But we're talking pretty much about what is affecting the mass of humanity and not the few who are undergoing a special cultivation of esoteric energies. Now, we also have to realize that although the sun is triply effective and in each case produces a self of some kind, let's just say the sun produces a self of some kind, individual, group, conscious, or universally conscious, that the sun does veil Neptune esoterically and Uranus hierarchically. We don't want to forget that. Sometimes the Tibetan refers to those veilings and discusses their significance, and sometimes he emphasizes the idea that the sun is the triple ruler, just as in Cancer, sort of negating the presence of the moon, he emphasizes that Neptune is the triple ruler of Cancer. And this fact of the triple appearance of Sun and Neptune may tell us something about the final days of this solar system, where Neptune, the great second-ray planet monadically, may become the foremost synthesizing planet. There is a triangle of synthesizing planets, Uranus, Neptune, and Saturn, and it is a triangle in revolution, as all triangles can be. And what this means may be that in the previous solar system, which was ruled by the third ray, perhaps Saturn was the major synthesizing planet, and at the top of that particular triangle with Neptune and Uranus on the baseline, and perhaps for this second ray solar system, it will be Neptune that is the synthesizing planet. And Neptune is a second ray monad, and it's as if the major triple emphases in the zodiac are Cancer and Leo. It's almost like the movement from the third aspect to the second aspect in one respect, because Cancer is a major third aspect sign. It does transmit the third ray and the seventh, an aspect of the third aspect. And Leo is the sign of the soul. It rules among the fire signs, solar fire, and soul consciousness. It has everything to do with the consciousness of the self. So right there, there's kind of a symbolism of the progression from the previous solar system to the present solar system. And also the two planets may be, in a way, the last ones. Sun is not a planet, of course, but after Neptune may absorb everything, maybe Uranus in the next solar system, with its first ray monad, absorbs the subtle principles of all planets and beings. But after Neptune does its work in this solar system, this is a theory, then the sun is the final synthesizer and indicated as such. I think the picture of this, oh, there it is. That's one picture anyway. Here we have the sun as the final synthesizer and two, really three synthesizing planets, we're not going to think that Saturn is the final synthesizer in this solar system. I don't see how it could be with its third ray monad, but Neptune may be the final synthesizer, which would mean that, at least theoretically, that it would synthesize the subtle principles, absorb the subtle principles of Uranus before it was absorbed into the Sun. And I think the heart of the Sun would play a very big role, because that is the soul nature of the Sun, which is under expression or emerging into expression, particularly in this solar system, not so much the monad. Leo appears in another important triangle at this time. Aries, Leo, and Virgo. A triangle which is potently aids in inaugurating the new age. So let's see here. We're on page 486, and in case there are any diagrams which I'm not able to see in the text, I want to make sure that I can pick them up here. But so far, it doesn't seem to be the case. Okay. Well, you know, Aries is always the sign of initiative. Leo creates the individuals and the individual initiates which are required to move into the Christ consciousness which can be cultivated in this age of Aquarius. The initiations number one under Leo and number two, in a sense under Virgo, will be administered in this age. Virgo isn't usually associated with the second initiation, but if you think about it, the kind of purification which is required in the astral body is very Virgoan. And Virgo does break the unity of Leo and emphasizes the dualities and is a strongly second ray constellation, and this is the second initiation in which the astral body must take on those second ray characteristics. I think it's possible to find a way for any factor, whether zodiacal or planetary, to contribute to a particular stage of development such as an initiation. So inaugurating the new age, well, Aries, of course, the sign of inauguration, entering something, entering into a new field, entering something new. That new age will be distinguished by a truly self-aware humanity. So there's the Leo aspect, right? A truly self-aware humanity. You can't really have a group without self-aware beings, so otherwise you just have a mass. So this is the Leo effect. Conditioned by a steadily manifesting Christ consciousness, and of course, this represents Virgo, the emergence of Christ consciousness. There may be the universal Christ consciousness, more found in Aquarius, but Virgo certainly begins the process of discriminating the Christ aspect of the individual from the personality aspect. The potency of Aries as it initiates those happenings which will set in motion the causes which will produce the new age can be seen today in the trend of all the new movements, indeed, in the formulation of the various world orders, and in the discoveries of science, and in the emergence of the new types in the different kingdom of nature, all about the new. Well, Uranus, the ruler of Aquarius, is a hierarchical ruler in Aries. And Uranus is about doing things in a new and better way. So he's very careful in his wording here. Aries, the potency of Aries, initiates those happenings which will set in motion the causes. First the happenings, and then when their meaning is registered, the assessment of those happenings become, and the attitudes develop, becomes the causes which will produce the new age, the sweeping aside of old energies and the thrusting forward into prominence of the new energies. And all of this is anticipated by movements and organizations which are seeking to embody the sensed new energies. This activity has only been felt since 1835. Now, when he gives a date like that, you know, 1825 was so important because it was both a shambolic impact and the midway point in the 500-year Ray II cycle, which began in 1575, but now 1835. You know, he knows something here about the science of cycles. This is just a little tidbit, just a little piece of the jigsaw puzzle that might magnetize other related pieces. If a historian were to look at this, perhaps certain happenings around that time could be constellated, and we would begin to see what this particular year referred to. Now, if it's only been felt since 1835, it might have been instituted even in 1825. In other words, it takes a while for something that is initiated to be felt. So is 1835, 10 years after 1825, a year of emergence, or is it a year of initiated activity, or when a particular type of energy made its first impact? The potency of Leo can be traced since then in a vast number of people who are achieving the integration of the personality and becoming self-conscious, as well as in the emergence of thousands of self-conscious world aspirants who are subordinating gradually, not immediately, it takes the struggle, their integrated personalities to the good of the group. So this this activity of bringing in the new age has only been felt, well, let's see. It depends on what he means by this activity, because there is the activity of the many new movements, but there is the larger activity here which is being discussed in this paragraph. I think it's the main activity, which we can call inaugurating the new age. So only since 1835, of course, in a way, if we go back to the time of Francis Bacon with his powerfully Aquarius horoscope and considering him the Maha Chohan, Aquarius bringing in much of the third ray as well, we could wonder whether even back in the early 1600s if some of these seeds for the Aquarian Age were not being distributed. The fifth ray came in 1775. That is 60 years after 1835 is 60 years after that. I don't see anything immediately there. I don't think any of the ray cycles is reaching a particular focus in 1835, but there are other three-year cycles and seven-year cycles, and they might, even nine-year cycles, they might converge on this 1835. I just have to let that go for a minute and ponder on that. Suffice it to say, we have the middle of the somewhere near the middle of the 19th century. It wasn't long after that that Neptune was discovered, I believe, in the 1840s. So anyway, this activity, it's an inaugural activity, bringing in something quite new. And how many years after Bacon flourished? Let's say he flourished around 1600. So 235, 250 years after that, part of a Ray II cycle. And when it comes to the 900-year cycle of the third ray, we begin in 1425 and end in 2325. So this is some 500 years into that cycle. Well, it's not going to gel for me exactly right now. Maybe someone can come up with it, but there is a seed here that when put together with further knowledge about the science of cycles will in fact, reveal something important about that science. This activity has only been felt since 1835. The potency of Leo can be traced since then. Well, okay, you know, let's ask that. Is this a particularly Leonian cycle? Like the rays, do the signs of the zodiac have their particular periods of cyclic influence? Now, if Aquarius is emphasized, then Leo will be also, because there is a reciprocity in opposing signs, and when one of the signs comes in, its opposite will come along, though maybe not as prominently, but will contribute something significant to the growth of that age. So, as the astrologer Dane Rudgar emphasized, we are now in the age of Aquarius Leo. 1835 for individuality. Obviously, you know, I'm of the pondering type, and it's going to stay in my mind now to see whether some connections might not be made. The vast number of people since then, in the vast number of people who are achieving the integration of the personality and becoming self-conscious. Well, this we can see today, and so much today is about the individual. The various more tribally influenced societies don't understand the emergence of the individual from the mass consciousness. Today, with so much of the sixth ray expressing itself through religions whose day has come and gone, in my view, and in the view, I think, of Master DK, we have the mass consciousness and much of the sixth ray. And we have the individual is not considered important, but the response of the group that adheres, I choose that word with care, that adheres to the tenets of that particular religion. We do see that stage of consciousness. It's pre-Leonian, in a sense. Now, the vast number of people who are achieving the integration of the personality and becoming self-conscious, as well as the emergence. Now, so that is a phase one, let's call it that. Phase one, as well as the emergence of thousands of self-conscious world aspirants who are subordinating gradually their integrated personalities to the good of the group. That's the whole thing. This is phase two in relation to Leo. The person on the path, well, let's put it like this. The disciple, and especially the initiate, will more rapidly subordinate the personality to the good of the group. This has been learned. The influence of Virgo appears in the many religious, spiritual, and mental organizations, so let's not forget Mercury here, and the importance of Mercury both as the exoteric ruler and exalted planet. Mercury is highly mental. The many religious, spiritual, and mental organizations and movements which indicate so directly the awakening of the Christ consciousness in humanity. So these are movements towards the good. The good, welfare, etc. And all of this really began in 1825. So many humanitarian movements since that point. Somehow I'm thinking that the 1835 is related to the 1825 in terms of the manifestation of that which was impulsed in 1825, but I'm not letting go of that date until it produces a little bit of significance at least. These triangles can be seen as vibrant living factors producing world changes and giving a tremendous push onward to human unfoldment. Okay, they can be seen seen by the seer, and always vibrant and in circulation. The lines of energy connecting the zodiacal triangles to various planets and planetary triangles, it must be incredible. Kaleidoscope. All right. It is interesting to bear in mind that just as each sign is divided into three decanates, which are ruled by specific planets, so the zodiac itself is part of a still greater zodiac and is also divided into three parts. It's almost as if, well, it makes sense in a way. The zodiac is like a sign in this greater zodiac. Well, how can we look at that? You know, there are constellations which are chakras in the one about whom naught may be said. Whether we should base this chakric system upon the familiar etheric body, we can possibly do that, and maybe there are other ways of doing it. The zodiac itself, as I have often said, and DK has stated, is the heart and the head center of the one about whom naught may be said. So it is, in a way, a huge constellation, the entire, or a sign, you might say. It's a huge constellation, and it can be divided into three parts, and maybe each one of these constellations is like a leading constellation in these three parts. That's one theory, at least. So the zodiac itself is part of a still greater zodiac and is also divided into three parts. Now, dividing the whole zodiac into three parts is not the same as singling out three signs which are of especial importance. The whole zodiac would have to be divided into three parts, and somehow the first, second, and third aspect would have to rule that triangle like every other triangle. The threefold division of the zodiac is ruled by, right, ruled by, okay. That's something I never noticed before. Ruled by three constellations, which are to this greater zodiac what the planets are to decanates. Now we can ask how we are to understand this. In any zodiac, there are many decanates because there are 12 signs, and DK tells us there is a zodiac of 10. Now, maybe this greater zodiac is a zodiac of 10 based upon the 3 and the 7. But in any case, these zodiacal signs, they are like planets. But are they like planets in a way to this greater zodiac, or to, well, let's just say that constellations are like planets. I think we can say that within this greater zodiac, constellations are like planets. Of course, it might also be possible to say, if we wanted to be completely continuous and move up the scale in a continuous way, that stars would be like planets. But here are constellations which seem to be the leading constellations in our entire zodiac. Our zodiac is like a sign in a way, and these three rule the three aspects of it, the first, second, and third aspect. Scorpio, first aspect, Pisces, second aspect, and Taurus, third aspect. So they rule this entire sign, which, analogous to a sign anyway, this entire constellation sign in this greater zodiac, which our normal zodiac is. But then, if these constellations, we call zodiacal, are like planets. There's no such thing as three planets only ruling an entire greater zodiac. So we'd have to look out there for constellational groupings which can be seen as greater wholes, a number of constellations making a greater whole, and certain of the constellations in that greater whole serving the function of planets. The analogy here is not exact, and there are some steps which are skipped. But what seems to be emerging for me here is that the entire zodiac has to be considered like a sign that has three decanates. And these three decanates are given, and these three decanates are to the entire zodiac what planets are to any one sign. So at least I'll try to make that analogy. It requires further exploration. The three named zodiacal constellations are to our entire zodiac of 12 what planets are, what three planets are to one constellation sign with its decanates. Well, as a matter of fact, maybe it's coming a little bit clearer here. So I have kind of an idea of how this might look. The analogy is still not exact, but we have a zodiac of 12, and it's divided. Our zodiac of 12, considered as a part of a greater zodiac, is divided into three parts. The three zodiacal constellations that are mentioned here, namely Scorpio, Pisces, and Taurus, are rulers of these three parts. Now, there must be other correspondences to signs in the greater zodiac. In other words, they will be great chakras. The zodiac as a whole, our zodiac of constellations, is a great chakra. Maybe Orion is a great chakra. Maybe the little bear, maybe the great bear. Maybe our seven solar systems, of which one is said, are great chakras. And there may be other correspondences to signs in this greater zodiac. And these constellations or signs will also be divided into three parts. Now, here is the thing that I'm realizing. If you look at our zodiac, we have 36 divisions when we consider the decanates. Now, in relation to these 36 divisions, there are only so many rulers. There is the Sun, the Moon, Mercury, Venus, not Earth, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. That's it. Just seven. Because the intra-Saturnian planets are considered, and the Sun and Moon are considered planets as well. And while there may be veilings of Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, and so forth in these decanates, those are not decanate rulers. So, in a larger zodiac, there may not be so many constellations which serve the function of planets. Maybe the constellation Taurus is one, the constellation Pisces is one, the constellation Scorpio is one, and maybe a few more. Seven? I'm not sure. Which will be arranged and rearranged in relation to the parts of the other constellations. Suppose we have our seven solar systems, of which ours is one. We divide it into three somehow. Let's say it has three decanates. Then, either one of the constellations that we are here naming, or maybe a few others, will be the ruler of the first decanate, the ruler of the second decanate or third decanate of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. And we could go to the other constellations as well, which are probably playing the role of chakras in this perhaps zodiac of 10. I'm assuming that this greater zodiac is the zodiac of 10. Now, if it's something else based on the number 12, I don't know what it is. But our zodiac is only one sign. And each one of these signs is divided into four constellations, which are like a grouping of one-third. And one constellation is the ruler, like a planet, of that grouping of three constellations. I hope I'm being clear. Let's say that Taurus is it's like a planetary ruler of a decanate, or the main part of a decanate, which consists of three other constellations along with Taurus, but Taurus is the ruler. I guess what I'm saying, it seems to me possible to transfer the influence of Taurus, Pisces, or Scorpio away from our zodiac and out into this larger zodiac where, like planets, these constellations would be decanate rulers. The analogy is not completely exact in my mind yet, but I'm getting some of the extensions concerning it that were not evident to me before. So just as there are not too many planets which are decanate rulers in our zodiac with its 36 division, in other words, there's more divisions than there are rulers, so there may not be too many constellations in this greater zodiac which rule the decanates of the so-called signs in this greater zodiac. We don't know how many decanates there are. If it's a zodiac of 10 and each so-called sign or section has three parts, then there would be 30 divisions. In a zodiac of 10, there would be 30 divisions. And if DK tells us that these constellations are like planets, then we have to spread those planets around the greater zodiac. Okay, the threefold division of our zodiac is ruled by three constellations, which are I have to read still more carefully. But just as each sign is divided into three decanates, which are ruled by specific planets, so the zodiac itself is part of a still greater zodiac. Now, here's the thing. There's the word, you've got to be specific. And is also divided into three parts, or which is also divided into three parts. It says and that word and points to the word zodiac. So our zodiac is part of a still greater zodiac, and our zodiac is also divided into three parts. We have to be very careful of the wording here. The threefold division of the zodiac is ruled by three constellations. Now, is it a threefold division of our zodiac, or a threefold division of the greater zodiac? I think it's a threefold division of our zodiac by three constellations, which are to this greater zodiac which planets are to the decanates. So for the time being, that's the conclusion to which I come, that these three constellations are like planets to be sent out into this larger zodiac and serve as the ruler of various other threefold divisions or decanates, like the threefold division or threefold division of our own zodiac. It looks like these three constellations that we are focusing on rule three divisions of our own zodiac, and we don't know how those divisions would be made, what other constellations would be in any one of the divisions. We could have a division of three constellations plus its ruler, let's say Taurus or Pisces or Scorpio, or somehow this ruler might be part of the three divisions, but definitely it is a ruler. It's ruled, so the zodiac itself, and it is also divided into three parts. The threefold zodiac is ruled, that's the by three constellations. Usually a ruler is of lesser status in some way than that which it rules, which is strange, of course. But that's the way the term is used in astrology, by three constellations, which are to this greater zodiac what planets are, the planets are to the decanates, and what's important to realize is that there will be other constellations along with Taurus, Scorpio, and Taurus, Scorpio, and Pisces, but will there be seven? Now, that's interesting, because Sun, Moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, seven. There are seven, under normal circumstances here, seven zodiacal, seven decanate rulers in our zodiac, no matter what other veilings may occur. So this idea is coming to me that there are three rulers of the greater zodiac, which three are part of our zodiac. But there may be four more if the number seven is important. Now, our three convey the first, second, and third rays. When we look at the zodiacal, when we look at the planetary rulers of our particular zodiac, they convey Sun, second ray, Moon, fourth ray, Mercury, fourth ray, Venus, fifth ray, Mars, sixth ray, Jupiter, second ray, Saturn, third ray. They don't convey all the rays. So these other rulers may or may not convey other rays. And how they would be chosen, what are the other constellations which are like planets in this greater zodiac? Who knows? But it just gives you an idea that we are enfolded within the one about whom naught may be said, perhaps with 10 centers, each one of which is like a sign, and the zodiac being a very, our zodiac being a very high center within this being, because it's the heart and the head center, has three of its aspects serving the role of decanate rulers. I guess we could go farther in the analogy, but let's not, lest we get into something completely impractical. All right, it's time to call this particular program to a close. So this will be the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 124, C, page 486. And we will be moving on to Esoteric Astrology Adventure 124D, page 486. All right.